For all of us watching, the Players this year was undeniably electric, with Scottie Scheffler making history and a finish that was a true nail biter. But for all of the ups, there were also quite a few downs, including Jay Monahan being visibly booed by fans during the trophy award ceremony. On top of that, the Wall Street Journal came out with a report during the Players calling it the biggest loser in golf's civil war. And all of this further notes that something has to happen as we rapidly approach this deadline. And for part of that, what we're seeing is today, as we speak right now, the Player Advisory Board, as confirmed by Patrick Cantlay, is meeting with Yasser and the PIF to see if they can advance this deal. This is something that Rory McIlroy said should have happened a long time ago.
Right.
And there is one major problem with this meeting that we absolutely have to dig into. But like I said, the divide was still very evident and very clear at the Players. Regardless, it was exciting, though.
It was exciting, man. What a finish. I think it was, to me, it felt like a leaderboard on a Sunday that the tour needed. You know what I mean? It's been a little absent of some big names the past couple of events. I mean, yes, we had Scotty and Wyndham going heads up, you know, with the Arnold Palmer, and then do it again this week. But it was just fun. I mean, it was great to see Harmon. I mean, the guy's electric. Guy's so good.
Yeah.
For a guy who just reemerged like Wyndham Clark. So, I don't know, fun Sunday, man.
And what Wyndham did and that putt that was just lipping out. Ugh. There's no denying, for any of us, like I said, who tuned into it, there was all that excitement. There was the big names. But, and this is where I want you guys to weigh in the comments too. Was it big enough? There was a lot of big names, of course.
There was.
But did you feel like something was missing? And in a second, I want to get into exactly what's going on with this big meeting today with the Player Advisory Board for the PGA Tour, Patrick Cantlay, Tiger Woods, and others, and the PIF. But it has to be brought up. It has to be said. And we've got some quotes that we want to dig into from the players of what they felt directly about it. But that report, again, from the Wall Street Journal, basically what they said, they labeled the players as the tournament that became the biggest loser in golf's civil war. And largely the reasoning behind this is, as many of people have through the years labeled this the fifth major.
Right.
If you want to put it in that bubble, in that classification, it now becomes the only quote unquote major that doesn't have a combined field with LIV.
Right.
The nature of the players being the PGA Tour's event. And as the PGA Tour maintains its ban and its suspension of players who defected to LIV, it is now in that category of five events, the only event that is lacking those players. And basically what they said was the Players' Championship has an awkward problem. It's missing a bunch of the world's best players.
Yeah. So, I mean, to that point, although it felt great Sunday, you had three major winners going down the stretch for the win, right? So that felt great. But yes, you would have easily saw Cam Smith in there. It did feel weird without them. There's guys that are on LIV that absolutely tear up Sawgrass. They're fun to watch at Sawgrass, like Cam. Guys like DJ, people like that. Would have been cool to see, but yeah, you're right. It did have that eerie feel that there are a lot of names still missing off the leaderboard. There were times on the weekend where on the right side of the TV screen, there was a long leaderboard.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really see this, but it was like 25 names, and you just did not see any of them. That was the eerie part.
Well, that's what I'm going to ask you guys, too. Did you, as you were watching this, and drop this in the comments, did you feel like it was a strong enough field, or were you truly missing the names like Bryson DeChambeau, Bubba Watson, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, John Rahm? You know, was it something lacking for you without those names, and is it pulling it apart? Now, one person that we're going to talk more about because he's on the Players Advisory Board, and they caught up with him and I got a quote from him, was Peter Malnati, and
yep.
He said, and it, kind of echoing that same kind of sentiment, he said, I think something needs to happen for our sport. I want to see a unified game where when we have events like the Players Championship, that we have all the best players in the world and we're proud to call them PGA Tour members. That's what I want. I don't know how we get there, but that's what I want. So there's two things in there. It's even the players identifying that this is supposed to be, you know, golf's strongest field, you know, outside of majors, basically. And it, in a way, it wasn't. It was still this is where I'm torn. It was still undoubtedly a very, very strong field, but it's hard to make the case that it was the strongest field without certain names in
it.
But this is where the impasse comes in and the thing that's having so much trouble being rectified. What does it look like if we start to bring everybody back? Is it still the PGA Tour? Because as he says in here, we're proud to call them PGA Tour members.
Yeah, I saw that part, yep.
Is that his way of saying, we want it, but only if it's still under the PGA Tour flag?
Right. That's what it sounds like.
That's the question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's get into this big meeting that's happening today and what we think ultimately is wrong with it. So it had been heavily speculated. And I think the good thing about having the players this week and earlier on in the year, in March, is that you know you're going to have all the best, you know, these big names who are on the PGA Tour Player Advisory Board who are going to be in front of the press and they're going to be asked the questions. So just a recap, too, for anybody who's not, you know, aware of it. Who's on that board, right?
I was shocked by the list.
Right. So
Malnati is like a random name for that list.
And I think a lot of it, I don't know exactly what goes into getting on there, but I think it's also like who's willing to put
probably
the time
who's willing
in.
To do it, right.
There's a lot of time that's involved, time commitments and things like that. But the board members as it stands, and these are the guys who, according to this, and this is largely done in still in a lot of secrecy. So the meeting is being held today at they're calling it an undisclosed residence in Ponte Verde Beach. So it's right by the players, but where?
I know. I think about the movie Analyze This when all the organized crime bosses met in this warehouse and it was like this whole thing where no one knew where it was going on.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like.
It feels like that. And I understand why they don't want to be swarmed with press.
Of course.
But
of course.
It was highly speculated that it was going to happen.
Tiger going to be there?
And then, well, that's the thing. There's nobody's going to list out an itinerary for this.
Of course.
But what they're loosely calling it is a meet and greet,
mm-hmm.
which is a part of what the problem we have with it, which we want to talk about here. But Tiger's a player advisory board member. He's one of the few. So I got to imagine he's going to be there. And I think you don't almost enter the room there without the weight of Tiger and get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Patrick Cantlay, Jordan Spieth, Charlie Hoffman, Peter Malnati, Webb Simpson, and Tiger Woods. That's what makes up your current board members, not only for the PGA Tour Player Advisory Board, but also for this new PGA Tour Enterprises, which is being formed with Strategic Sports Group and all that stuff that we've been talking about. So this was kind of news was first kind of broke by Golf Week. So according to Golf Week, what they said was a meeting was tentatively scheduled for Monday at a private residence in Ponte Verde Beach, Florida, following the conclusion of the Players' Championship at nearby TPC Sawgrass. Patrick Cantlay, a player director on the PGA Tour Policy Board, confirmed the meeting with Sports Illustrated on Sunday and tabbed the event as a meet and greet. We're going to read what some of the guys said about it and what Rory's response was, because they were all questioned this week. But this is where I'm going to start to drive home what I think is the major problem.
Okay.
We had the shock announcement from Jay Monahan and the PIF shocking the world that there was going to be a merger last summer.
Right.
We set a deadline for the framework agreement for the end of the year. We then extended that deadline, missing that deadline, to the Masters this year.
Mm-hmm.
We are now 3 weeks away from the Masters. And you're telling me this is the first time that these guys are going to even meet?
Interesting.
What? There's something dramatically wrong here. And I think it points to the frustration of the fans booing Jay.
Yep.
If there's not at least a problem with leadership, there's a problem with communication here.
Yeah, no.
How do you have these guys working towards a multi-billion dollar deal to effectively salvage and save the world of professional golf?
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't even met yet. Right? They're calling it a meet and greet. And this is what Patrick, we're not setting ourselves up for much success here. This is what Patrick Cantlay said. He said, I doubt we'll get into anything substantive in the first meeting.
You gotta love that.
So what are you gonna do? You know, literally break bread? You know, maybe somebody brings in some donuts and coffee.
Interesting.
Right?
Wow.
And Cantlay went on to say, I'm excited to hear what I will learn and I'll have a lot more information after. So he's not even setting the stage that this is like the the icing on the cake, the kind of the last bit needed to put pen to paper and sign this deal.
Right.
He's saying we haven't even met the PIF yet. And there's even was some rumors, again, this has not been publicized exactly what's happening in the meeting, but the members of the strategic sports group may even be in on this,
of course,
meeting together. Mm-hmm. And effectively what's still happening is that they're going to the PIF to see if they want to still be in play to be an investor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure some questions will be asked. I think, you know, a large part of, I think that what leadership will come from is Tiger Woods in this,
yep.
No doubt, but shocking to me that this is the first time they're speaking.
Yeah, it is pretty shocking. You would have thought it would have happened, like you said, a long time ago. But and where are we now? 3 weeks away from this deadline? Where are we now in the world? March 19th?
Right.
March
18th? From the Masters was kind of the loose deadline that was set. But again, like even from a leadership standpoint, how do you have the other key components, the player advisory board, and then Jay's having these meetings. Remember, Jay was just recently back out in Saudi Arabia meeting. There was more meetings kind of evolving this, but he's doing this all on his own.
Right.
The players are doing this on there. There's such a big disconnect here that it doesn't give me a lot of hope, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's go get on to what Rory said. Now, remember, Rory has removed himself from the player advisory board, has largely taken more of a backseat and more of just offering opinions than being involved.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
I don't blame him either in the large way after seeing what we saw on Netflix, watching Full Swing,
right.
Watching what it had done for his mental state, watching what it had done for his game to be there. And a lot of these players we saw feeling like they had, as he said, a sacrificial lamb, the rug ripped out from underneath them. In a way now, Rory's just kind of offering his opinions. But what he said was, I think it should have happened months ago, so I'm glad that it's happening. Hopefully that progresses conversations and we get a little closer to a solution. So interestingly, Rory has already met with Yasser himself.
Interesting.
So for again, building this case of how wild it is that guys like Patrick and Tiger have not yet met.
Right.
Rory, it was at the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai. He met with Yasser and in a less formal role, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think this is just more of just the getting to know each other.
Right.
A couple of notable quotes that came out of that. Rory said, I've spent time with Yasser and the people that have represented him in LIV and I think have done him a disservice. Mm-hmm. So Norman and those guys, and this is what McIlroy recently said in an interview at the Players on Sunday, which I think is interesting. And there are people who are pro Rory and people who are anti Rory. And one of the things that has been, whether you're in his camp or you're not, the reality is a lot of people feel like Rory is still too hard on LIV in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to see this as his rhetoric as a separation. And it seems like a lot of his anger and tension is going towards LIV specifically and Greg Norman.
Yeah.
You know, remember he had said that, and I'm paraphrasing here, nothing was going to happen productive until Norman exits stage left.
Yep.
Remember when he said
that? Yeah, he said that, yep.
So now the PIF obviously is the one funding LIV. He's now indicating a feeling that LIV is doing a disservice to the ultimate goals of the PIF and their involvement in golf in the way that they're handling things. And here's what he said more. He said, I actually think there's a really big disconnect between PIF and LIV. I think you got PIF over here and LIV are sort of over here doing their own thing. So the closer that we can get to Yasser, PIF, and hopefully finalize the investment, I think we'll be doing, I think that will be a really good thing. So Rory is kind of like saying the negotiations are not with LIV now.
Mm-hmm.
They're with the PIF.
Right. Yep.
He's almost like giving us this feeling that the LIV negotiations and speaking with Norman is a dead end. You got to go right to the money source.
Sure.
Which is funny. Yeah. And there's going to be conspiracy theorists out there who'll be like, yeah, well, it's all about the money. We're all going for the money.
Right. Interesting. He hates Norman though that much, huh? I could see Rory never going to LIV as long as Norman is there.
Right. But that's what seems like the problem.
I could see him having the power of saying, if you remove Norman, maybe I'll consider it. And them saying, fine, Norman, you're out of here. But
it would be tough for LIV, though, to turn their back on a guy who stuck his neck out as far as Greg Norman did.
True.
For this.
True.
And it's just so interesting to me that in the beginning, a lot of the problem and the gripes that we heard were with the PIF, not necessarily with LIV.
Right.
People were saying, you know, about their concerns about the money coming from a Saudi-backed investment fund and stuff like that. And now it seems like we're hearing this role reversal where they're cozying up to the PIF and not to Greg Norman and the kind of the heads of the powers that be at LIV. Mm-hmm. Either way, we're seeing kind of a separation there. One thing I did hear Rory say, and as we were traveling this week, you know, we were down in Atlanta, got to do a Vokey wedge fitting, which was so cool. You're going to see that in the main channel coming up really soon.
So sick.
But the one morning of the players, Thursday morning, and I'm sitting there watching Rory's whole interview, and he said something that I thought was interesting. So I'll tell you the exact quote in a second, but what Rory was saying was that he felt like things had been handled backwards from the start. Things were going the wrong way. Mm-hmm. He said that the way that things were going was that on the PGA Tour side, a decision was being made to benefit the players, and then they would then have to try to sell that decision to the fans and the press.
Right.
Rory said it should have been the other way. He said, I think what needs to happen is you need to create things for the fans, for the sponsors, for the media. Then you have to go and sell that to the players. Tell them to get on board with that. Because if they get on board, and we're all part of the business now, if the business does better, we do better. That seems pretty simple to me.
Yeah, makes sense.
And I think that's been and you guys can weigh in the comments if you feel like this is personal to you, how you felt. But I think that the big disconnect a lot of people have felt was that all the decisions made so far have been all about the players.
Right.
It's been the players getting much, much richer.
Right, because it's the players that they also don't want to keep losing. You know what I mean?
For sure.
So,
but it's been so player-focused and player-driven that who's been left in the back seat has been the fans. Mm-hmm. Who's been left in the dark has been the media. And then players complain that the media has these, you know, kind of scathing reports and opinions. But to a certain extent, they've been so left with poor communication and in the dark. Where do you expect the headlines to go?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious. Like, are golf fans really angry? Are they really upset? Because at the end of the day, you can watch all these guys still, right? But, like, you could still watch them in the majors. The majors are still fun. They're exciting. Obviously, the players were still exciting. I know it's a different taste because not everyone was there. But come Augusta, when everyone, or Brooks and Rahm and Phil and Tiger even are all on the field, we're going to have happy fans. You know what I mean?
Well, I think there's a wide spectrum of emotions in the fans. You're going to have some people, and we see it. We see it in the comments. People who are angry, no doubt. I think that's a small portion of the pie. What I'm more worried about are the fans who are disenchanted. They're not necessarily mad, but maybe they don't tune in this week.
Yeah.
I don't want to get to a situation where we tune in four times a year.
Right. Right.
That's the concern. Mm-hmm. I think where they need to start to fix this whole thing is and realize, for as much as they made it money focused and where's this guy going, where's that guy going, the ones who've been hurt by it are the fans. The ones who've been left in the dark, the ones who've been left behind are the fans in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Now, one other thing that we're going to keep talking about this here, and we're going to kind of surmise, like, where do we think we can go? Because, like, we're going to have to wait to hear what comes out of this meeting today between the PIF and the Player Advisory Board. And, of course, we'll continue to report on that here on the podcast as it comes out. But in the meantime, all we can do is kind of think, like, where are we headed? Because the other big question that was asked of Rory, it was asked of Jay Monahan. In fact, there's a clip from the press conference at the Players. Jay seemingly like trying to plead his case of what's been done so far and trying to say, like, we're making progress, but it's going to be a slow grind. But, like, where do we go? And the one question that kept coming up was this idea that both Rory had brought up and then Jay was kind of supporting, was this idea of a smaller, more worldwide type of tour
of
the best players. And the questions that immediately came up was people saying, like, it feels like you're leaving out the opportunities for guys to come up, all that stuff. We talked about this last week on the podcast saying, wow, it's sounding more and more like LIV, which is a smaller field event, big names, international events, whatever it may be. So Rory was pressed in the conference on this idea of, are you leaving out the up and comers by doing this? Yeah. By having his idea was a PGA Tour, 100 guys maybe have their card, and every year 20 are relegated in and out, and you get guys a little bit of churn there. But Rory said something interesting, and I kind of wondered who this is, might be a quiet shot at. And he said, I'm all for giving the young guys opportunities. Like, I think there should be more opportunities for PGA Tour U. I think there should be more opportunities for the Korn Ferry guys. It's the guys that get on tour, get comfortable, and don't really, and here he's kind of surmising, they don't really do much. He said, that's where I think the tour could do a better job of bringing the new talent in and sort of these steady pipelines. And it made me wonder, like, who's he talking about, right? Yeah. Do you feel like there are guys who get on tour and just get comfortable and complacent?
And that's a tough one.
That's a tough one.
Because you got to the ultimate Graceland. Now you know you have to perform still to eat, right?
Right.
I don't know.
And I think what's given us such unique insight into this has been Full Swing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a great example. Let's take Joel Damon for a second.
He was the first guy I was thinking of.
Would you, and now maybe if you were a casual observer, you may think he seemed like a guy last year who was out there and just complacent and going through the motions.
Right.
But what Full Swing unlocked, and I don't want to spoil this for anybody, so maybe I'll try not to give too many spoilers here. Sure. You have to watch the Joel Damon episode. But what we got a further insight into was the internal turmoil that was really happening. So where it may seem, without being in his head, like he's just complacent,
yep,
the reality is he was dealing with some demons there.
Sure.
Yep. Right? And I think that you may get a lot of that on tour. And we even saw like guys like the other episode they did on Kim, you know, and he's talking about how like it felt like you made it once you got to the PGA Tour, but then when he got there, he realized this was just the start.
Exactly. Right.
So I would find it hard to believe, and maybe there are guys out there, you guys could say in the comments if you think there are a couple of names out there who maybe are just complacent.
I'd say later on in career guys, maybe. I know Charlie Hoffman, he's on that list, the advisory board, but like there's a guy out there just playing in a couple events.
Yeah, but we got the insight at the Waste Management. Again, we don't see it. He's aging. He's having trouble in some ways competing with somebody. But they talked about, even at his age, how hard he pushes himself to still, right? There's a difference between desire and ability.
Sure.
Sometimes you're going to lose a little bit of ability.
Right.
I just don't know if I think there are any guys out there. We saw Kisner jokingly talk about how he's okay with coming in fifth because it pays a lot of money.
Right.
Yep. Right? That might be the closest thing I can say that, but I would not label Kisner as a complacent guy. He's a competitor.
Sure.
He's a hard competitor.
I think they all are. Mm-hmm.
So I think where the flaw in Rory's thinking is that there are, and he would know better than we do. So I guess I'm tough to judge there because he's with these guys in the locker rooms week in and week out. Maybe he's hearing something we don't hear.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there are guys who are just happy to collect their $100,000 each week.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's it. And he's saying he wants the hungry guys to come in and take their place. But I don't know if there must be more to that, I feel like.
Yeah, there might be.
There might be more to that. So there's now we're sitting in this world where now this player advisory board is meeting with the PIF. They've got a significant amount of funding that's now come in from the Strategic Sports Group, $3 billion, I think $1.5 billion of that to go towards player equity, really putting more say and money into the players' pockets, but there's still hurdles if they're going to come together. And like I said, casualties, like we saw of the Players' Championship, one big hurdle of that has been this continued idea of if you were to bring them back, what do you do with all the guys who took big money, went to live? Are they now penalized money to come back? Or on the other side, is part of this big funding now to pay out all the guys on tour who didn't leave? Mm-hmm. I have some thoughts on that. And we're going to talk a little bit more about Jay getting booed and the structure kind of going forward. But let's do a quick word from our sponsors and then bounce back into it. You know, I mentioned earlier that we got a chance to get fit for the new Vokey SM10 wedges. That they're it's amazing to get out there to hit them. And the truth is that nothing can really do more to sharpen your short game than a fresh set of grooves. You know, especially those grooves are spin milled in that new Vokey SM10 wedge design. And Bob Vokey and his team, we had the exciting opportunity to meet with Bob again and talk to him here on the podcast earlier this year. But the reality is, and you see it, you know it, you see the passion in his eyes, that the whole team, they never stop grinding. And you really see that from the SM10. Again, we've had this such unique opportunities to even get in there on the tour truck, see the way the players engage. They are constantly giving that feedback, and that just results in these new iterations. And we're seeing that among the best players in the world. We saw it this week, you know, at the Players. And the SM10, it's really designed around those three keys to great wedge play. You got shot versatility, you got distance, and you got trajectory control, plus maximum spin. And we got to feel all of it. We went through it. There are so many new combinations of bounce and grind in the SM10 lineup. And just getting out there and getting to hit them and being under the guidance of a fantastic fitter. Again, you guys will see the full video on our main channel just coming up real soon, just as we really get into the nitty gritty of it. For me, it was just so amazing to get to try those different grinds side by side. And one thing that stood out to me, the fitter said, he said, "No matter what bounce and grind selection you end up with here, I don't want you to feel swayed one way or the other. There's been a major winner who's used them all." Mm-hmm. And that just shows the diversity and how different we are. At every level of the game, we all play a little bit differently. So finding the right fitting for you is so important. So get better wedges. Become a better player with those new Vokey design SM10 wedges. Go to Vokey.com, sharpen your short game with SM10, and find a fitter near you. You will stand to benefit from it greatly. Trust me, the fittings are incredible.
Another great thing about that fitting, though, Frank, was able to bust out the brand new Pro SLX from FootJoy. Got them a couple weeks ago and just didn't have the opportunity yet because it's still cold up here. But I broke them out for the fitting. And if you haven't seen them, the new Pro SLX, they're engineered with this power track system, this innovative 3D X wing on the bottom heel of it. It's super cool. It's designed for that swing stability. You know, we always talking about stability into the ground, optimized traction, and no matter what conditions you play in, sometimes it's sloppy out there, firm ground, all different kinds of grasses. We experienced different grass down in Georgia. There was all different types of terrains. And the best part is that X-wing on the bottom. It's just unique. It's cool. But what it does, I'm going to tell you what it does, it manages lateral and upper movement. I mean, FootJoy, the team there, they think of everything, and they get you in traction, comfort. And you know what's cool about it, too? The colorways. There's so many different colorways, the blue, light blue, yellow. It's just really, they pop out there. People have been asking, you know, where'd you get those shoes? Well, these are what they are, the all new FootJoy Pro SLX. Go check them out. Check out the entire lineup. Just head over to FootJoy.com.
Okay, so let's talk about Jay's not so warm reception at the Players and what that kind of meant. And like I said, earlier in the week, Jay had a press conference, and it just feels like Jay is a bit on his heels right now, trying to explain things. And he was trying to make a case. I'm going to talk about that in a second. But what happened was, basically, when Mike Tirico mentioned Jay's name, as was reported, the boos were loud and clear. And you heard it in that moment. And Jay tried to ignore it, tried to brush it off, not make a thing of it. He didn't respond directly to it. But I think what it speaks volumes about is that this is the PGA Tour's premier event. This is the PGA Tour's quote-unquote major. Right. Yep. Aside from the FedEx Cup playoffs, this is as big as it gets for that tour.
Sure.
And here you have the face, the head of that tour. And what's happening is that he's getting outright booed by fans. I feel like there's a continued concern amongst a lot of people of what that leadership looks like. And I'll paraphrase here because I don't have the quotes in front of me. But I know also earlier in the week, Rory was asked basically if, in so many words, if Jay's still a good leader. And Rory is still coming to his defense. Sure. Rory had listed all the things that Jay had done, navigating them through some really tough years recently with COVID and things like that, the changes that were made. And Jay kind of tried to defend himself. Sometimes I feel, though, like it might be, you know, a little bit, you could sense maybe some of his own hesitation in Jay's word, like almost like trying too hard to say like how, what he's done. It was one thing that I thought was really interesting and like kind of rubbed me in a weird way was Jay in his press conference of listing all these things he's done. He made a point to call out this specific story where he said that Brian Harman ran up to him in the player's parking lot to say he hadn't gotten a chance to do it, but he wanted to specifically say to Jay how great he thought the signature events were.
Why did he have to say that?
Right. Yeah, like, yeah. It just feels like when you're just trying so hard to convince. And I feel like what Jay really has right now, and a large part by extension of that, the PGA Tour, has a communication problem. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily think that communication problem is the same communication problem we had with the surprise announcement of the merger, and that things are not being said. It's more so that things are being said, but maybe not heard well, because I think there's a layer of distrust.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I felt that as I'm watching this press conference with Jay, and he's going on, and I will say, he's absolutely making some great points. He's talking about the challenges that they have with the schedule, and he called out what a lot of the media have been saying, like, why does the FedEx Cup run right into, you know, NFL football and college football, and he was going through, and he was listing all of his reasoning, and if you just saw those facts on paper, you'd say, yeah, a lot of this makes a lot of sense, right? What they've done here. It's just, I think he's so undercut himself, which he's admitted to, that he handled it wrong. Mm-hmm. He's so undercut himself with the way that he surprised players and fans out of the blue with this announcement of the merger, that I think there's just a certain degree where people just they're not ready to trust him or listen.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. And there are guys who have been vocal about it. And I love that he ousted Brian Harman as the office suck up.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's funny.
He called him out by name. He said, Brian, he goes, Brian came running up, not running up, but he came up to me and he said, I haven't had a chance to say this to you, but the signature events are so great. I love the way these are playing out. Whatever it may be. Again, you guys can watch. It's on YouTube, the entire press conference where Jay goes on for about 5 straight minutes answering a question, but it's just his platform to talk about how right things really are going. But he said it's a long game, it's a long process. Mm. Other thing though that Jay said in there, and hearing him say it this way kind of pointed out just how long the PGA Tour season was. And he said, basically the tour season schedule is 31 weeks with 3 weeks in the playoffs. And that's, I mean, something we've kind of always known, but that's long.
It's long.
You know, and Jay did point out how the fall season has become more poignant. It's become more of a draw with guys trying to keep their tour cards and win their way into the signature events and things like that. And it's true. It's become a little bit better. But I was looking at it, and you have the NFL, you realize, is 18 weeks plus the playoffs.
Yep.
The closest thing I could come up to it was
baseball?
Major League Baseball, which is 26 weeks.
So it's 26 weeks.
26 and a half weeks, you know. But it does make me wonder, like, how do we now rectify this with whether it be that the PIF now provides, it comes out of this meeting and they provide some funding to the PGA Tour. There's a totally a possibility that they separately just become an investor in the PGA Tour, provide some money, and there's never a merger. And LIV continues to operate separately.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. But if they do come together, now we've got a couple of schedules. So these guys don't have to play literally every single week without an offseason. You've got the PGA Tour schedule, LIV golf schedule, and the TGL schedule. Yeah, right? Don't forget, the TGL was briefly shelved. They had the collapse of the stadium, but I recently read that now they're going with not a kind of a dome roof, like a solid structure.
That'd be smart.
Smart. Okay, yep. I like to see that. But as players commit to these, how do you reconcile that they're not playing all the time?
Yeah.
And I just wonder if it's, we talked about this here. You have now this kind of this odd feeling, this like this weight tipping back and forth of signature events, these massive stacked field and big payouts, and then your non-signature events, and it's just kind of like, you look this week, I think you have two players, it's still a good field, but you have the Valspar, you have two players who are in the official World Golf Rankings top 10, and I think you have 5 in the top 20. There are big names in there, you know, they're mixed in, but it's, if when you feel it right against the prior week of the players, it feels like whatever, it's like not as much. Do you get to a point where the PGA Tour season gets reduced to maybe instead of 31 weeks, maybe it's
go to six
18
months.
Weeks.
Okay.
You know, maybe like the NFL, or maybe a little longer, maybe it's 20 weeks. And every week is a big event.
Yeah.
And that's then you maybe, again, I don't know if this will work out. This is a kind of above my pay grade trying to work these schedules out. But what if LIV and the TGL are in those other months? And now you have players who could say, I'm going to focus for 20 weeks. And now it's a grind, no doubt. The golf schedule is a grind more than most, because you're flying to a different location every week. We've talked before about practice rounds, pro-am obligations, all that. But no different than baseball. They're on the move for all of their however many weeks, 26 weeks. What if you said players are going to commit to 18 to 20 weeks? Every week is a big, big event.
Yep.
Rework the players is in there.
Yep.
You know, the only off weeks from the PGA Tour are the four majors, whatever it may be. It wraps up in a playoff, and then these guys have 4 or 5 months off.
Exactly.
But then in that month, they make a decision. Want to play at LIV for a couple, maybe LIV schedule fits in there. Or maybe the PIF, TGL is in there.
Right.
So you either take some months off or you go one of these other tours.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm right there with you. I was even going to sprinkle in the mix like the Korn Ferry Tour is playing simultaneously as the PGA Tour, but maybe after the tour ends, maybe the tour just goes post Super Bowl to right before like end of August. So it is 6 months long. It's half the year. Now players have 6 months off. They get that off season that a lot of them want, right? But then after those 6 months during the Korn Ferry, maybe right after that, there's like a 12 to 14 week qualifying tour where all the top money winners from the Korn Ferry go on this like mini tour that when come next February, you win your tour card from that, you're on the main PGA Tour. And also during that time off, LIV just bangs out their 14 weeks. Hong Kong, here, there. And then they're off for 8 months, you know what I mean?
Right, or they are welcome back to the tour.
The majors, they'll come back for the majors.
Well, the majors, but what if they merge back together and they're welcome back to the tour?
Maybe they don't even have to come back to the tour.
I'm thinking like guys like, let's say Koepka, who says he kind of, or Rahm, they're saying they kind of miss playing in the waste management.
Yeah.
What if their LIV season wraps up and now they're playing there? Now, I know there's a lot to still unpack there that would have to work out, but it just makes me wonder, a little bit more of a condensed might make it so these guys have more opportunities to do other things. Now, I like the staggering, though, of different possible tours. Because one thing, as a fan, I'm not necessarily ready to give up. And where we do benefit as fans with the long season is just knowing you're going to watch golf every Sunday. Right?
Yeah,
I would kind of miss that. If there were certain Sundays there was no golf, I would kind of miss that. Like if
I think it's fragmented golf, which is what confuses me. I like the idea of like PGA Tour is over. Now I'm in LIV golf season. Now I know that LIV golf is on every week. I have no idea when the next LIV golf event is because it's just too far away. They go like 4 weeks.
Yeah, they do. They go quick.
They go two weeks in a row or 3 weeks in a row, and then they take a long break. I don't know where it is. I think it's in Florida.
So it's hard. You're saying it's hard to like put your focus into it.
And then
it.
Go back to the – yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to just focus on the PGA Tour, all the majors, all the great signature events, Scottie Scheffler. And then that's over. Those guys are now on vacation in Hawaii with their families.
Yep.
Now I shift over to LIV. And I'm watching LIV for 14 weeks.
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
Yeah, and that's why we want you guys to weigh in the comments, because there's different ways that this could be done. But because the last thing I would want is, like, I enjoy when I'm snowed in here in, the Northeast, being able to put in January Hawaii on and watch some tours. Great. And I would miss that if there was no golf. Let's say no golf kicked up till March. Let's say it was a March
PGA
through
tour golf.
Well, that's the thing.
Right. Okay.
If it's something else.
Still give us golf 12 months out of the year.
I want
to. There's plenty of opportunities for TGL and all these things. But
right.
Yeah.
Right. So obviously it just shows with the how close we are to this new deadline. It just shows how much further we still need to go to work out these things. And if nothing else, it does bring up our wish list, but it's bringing up this idea of like, this just shows that there's a lot to be reconciled in order to make this happen. But if nothing else, we know that the dissension continues, the upsetness continues with Jay being booed and things like the Wall Street Journal, as you pointed out earlier, pointing out the players missing quite a few big names. It's got to be called out. But on the same token, the wheels progress forward, and let's just hope. I guess all we could think is better late than never is all I can say about this. Yeah. The fact that these guys now from the player advisory board are finally meeting with the PIF and Yasser and the investors there to say, are we going to be able to do something? It's just, I just hope that it's not too little too late, because what took them this long to get together is beyond me.
Yeah, you're right. And we always laugh and joke about being a fly on the wall, recently at least, at these Masters Champions dinners, but even more so this year with Rahm.
Yeah.
As the returning, making his speech at that dinner in front of everyone, the jokes that'll be coming out, the stuff that'll be flying. Will there be any news updates from this deadline by then? I know the pressers are going to be hot that week with all these questions for Phil and everyone there. Should be good.
And that first major will be the first opportunity where you're now going to have in that hot seat at the press conferences, you're going to have both LIV players and PGA Tour players coming in to sit down, and the press will be sitting there getting ready to ask them questions and hearing both sides right there then.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we're going to learn a lot. We're getting close to the majors. Make sure you guys subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and we'll continue to watch this story closely.